Yeah. Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs Committee, call to order, and then open the work session on Senate Bill 13A. And
would you like a summary?
Yeah, can you give us a summary of what it does and what the amendments do?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 13A, you'll recall, requires the Public Utilities Commission to biannually submit a report to the governor and the legislature or the emergency board on or before January 31 of each odd number year on the status of completion and regulations in the telecommunications industry. The report is required to contain data regarding the availability of broadband service and the usage of broadband services. And you have two amendments before you today. You have dash A2 and dash A3. The difference between the two is the dash A2 amendment moves, the current bill has a sunset of 2008. The dash 2 amendment is moves that sunset date to 2010, and the dash A3 amendment changes that sunset date to June 30th and goes back to the original language of 2008. So it's a little bit confusing, and if you want me to walk through that one more time, I will. But the bottom line is the two amendments change the sunset date.
Okay, Senator Nelson. Have you seen the amendments?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. My name is David Nelson, for the record, State Senator from Pendleton. Now, I have no problem with changing the date to 2010. I mean, I think the issue is brought up by Representative Kitts before, was he didn't like the two dates. You know, there's two different sunset dates. I thought they were unrelated, but I mean, I appreciate and respect that. And I would prefer that you put it so that it sunsets on 2010. That would be the dash A2s. And it's really related to Senate Bill 15, too, so that's...
Yeah, why don't we, so we can have, I guess I can open work session on both so we can have a dual discussion here. Open a work session on Senate Bill 15 also, and...
Certainly.
Yeah. Here, if you...
Senate Bill 15... extends the sunset date on the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council to January 2, 2010. It also authorizes payment of expenses to the members of the council from contributions, not from state funds, but in the event that a grant or contributions might be received by the council. SB 15 also requires a report to the Legislative Assembly by February 1 of 2009 on how best to coordinate statewide, regional, and local telecommunications services and to implement distance learning for education and health care communities. You have before you dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 15. That set of amendments changes the sunset date of the Coordinating Council to June 30, 2008. It also deletes lines 31 through 34, which removes the requirement for the report to the legislature and also removes the emergency clause. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chairman, if you'll allow me to explain my logic, I think it's the million-dollar question. I think we're probably the better part of 3.5 years now, if I could explain my logic. Senate Bill 13 and the required reporting back to the legislature on issues dealing with telecom, and Senate Bill 15, which extends the sunset on the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council. I think that from my perspective, there's two issues at play here, and the dash A3s and the dash A2s and the dash 1s in Senate Bill 15 are all getting at the two issues that I've had. First of all, that if in fact we're extending the sunset on an entity that is making suggestions to the telecom industry, various proposals, etc., that the PUC be required to let the legislature know exactly what's going on with that so that they're up to speed and can make decisions at that point further, i.e., where are these decisions coming from? Who's making them? Are they good for the process? So if, in fact, the decisions or the proposals as related to telecom are coming from the OTCC, this body has the ability to evaluate that. So my first concern is making sure that the reporting is the same as the extension of an industry that's dealing with the telecom industry. So in this case, one bill says 2008. The other bill says extend the OTCC to 2010. The dash A2 amendments would extend the requirement to report out to 2010. The dash ones for Senate Bill 15 would pare back the extension from 2010 to 2008, making it germane with Senate Bill 13. Now, the first concern was the germaneness of the date. I think it needs to be the same, whether it's 2008 or 2010. My second concern with regards to Senate Bill 15 and the reason for the dash 1 amendments is I've expressed it to Senator Nelson and respect the senators, unfortunately disagree with him on this issue, and I think that's what this body is about. I've got heartburn when it comes to extending any organization beyond a legislative session. I see no difficulty in coming back, as they've done before, saying we want reauthorization to continue on. And so my concern is if we extend this two legislative sessions out, then in fact 80% of us, based on average turnover, won't be here. So you're going to have probably one or two people on this committee that were here for the extension without background of it other than a bill summary. That's my concern with extending it out, which is why Senate Bill or the dash 1 amendments would pare it back from June 30th of 2010 to June 30th of 2008 and give that legislative oversight that I think is important to anything that's dealing with public policy. So if it's the desire of the committee, I think the germaneness issue of either 2008 or 2010 is mutually agreed upon by everybody with that concern of mine. And I think where the disagreement comes, and I'm willing to concede to the chair or to the committee, my preference would be to move in the dash ones on Senate Bill 15 and make it 2008 and guarantee that legislative oversight. If that's not the will of the committee, then I am willing to just consider the dash A2 amendments to Senate Bill 13. But that's the genesis of the two sets of amendments, or the two different amendments to the two different Senate bills that you have in front of you. So I would be open to the committee's discussion.
Any other comments or discussion?
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I misspoke and got carried away with crossing things out. The dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 15 does not remove the emergency clause.
No.
Senator, any comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate Representative Kitt's position. I did hand out two sheets of paper for you. This one about Yahoo Wild about savings, basically, that says that Oregon can credit at least part of Yahoo's decision to its broadband foresight. And at the bottom line, it says the data system is made up of five concentric circles. And this is in Hillsborough. I think that's probably in Representative Kitt's district. Google has come into the Vidal's. There's been a very positive effect from that, this telecommunications issue that actually started in 1999, in which telecom companies at that time fought. But here we have one of the best systems in the state, and so, I mean, so it's here. So why are we still fighting it? You've got a group of people that are very committed. There's also another letter that I gave to you from Insight. It's a letter from the Telecommunications Coordinating Council to Marty Brantley. And part of the fact of that is there's 11 undersea cables that are coming from the Far East into Oregon. They're changing from Internet Protocol 4 to Internet Protocol, or Protocol 6, Protocol, whatever that is. We have an opportunity in the state of Oregon. The Oregon Telecommunications Council is working on this project. We're talking about economic development. Shall we develop some of these big off-ramps in the state of Oregon that will connect us to the Far East? I mean, that's what this group is doing. I think they've proven their worth. They're going to continue to prove their worth, and I think that we should extend it out to 2010. Representative Kidd is concerned about oversight, but if you look on page 3 of the bill, on line 27, it says that this Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council shall report to the 74th Legislative Assembly no later than February 1st. There's going to be oversight. It's not as though they're out there just doing anything. They're going to report to the legislative body. So, I mean, from my viewpoint, these folks are very dedicated, and they're very concerned about progress in the state of Oregon. And I've always challenged my good friends in the telecommunications company, well, you guys come up with a solution. And I haven't seen any yet. This group will at least push the envelope, and we keep pushing and keep pushing, and I think that's what this system is. You know, we talk about having dissent and disagreement, but just because the telecommunications company disagree with these people and they actually cause them a little extra work, that doesn't mean anything. The most important thing, what's the bottom line? Let's bring something into Representative Kitt's district. Bring something out in my district. Somebody in your district. And that's the telecommunications. So, I mean, this is a good group of people, and I think I don't see any problem with the oversight, and I would hope that you would not amend Senate Bill 15, and I can respect having the same dates and amend Senate Bill 13.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative
Kitt. Senator, I appreciate, and I please don't think that by my dash one amendments to Senate Bill 15 that I in any way, shape, or form question these folks' dedication to the job that they do, because I don't. I would also contend back that I don't think that whether you have the sunset of 2010 or 2008, it would make them any more or less dedicated to the causes of which they do. And I would also say that I, for one, have not been lobbied by any of the telecommunications industry on this bill, any of these 13, 15, or 17. I went to them with my concerns and my questions that I'm raising here in the form of amendments, and was told, you do what you want. So, just for the record, and I can say that to you as a friend and straight face, I know that you alluded at the beginning of your other testimony, the telecommunications folks would come in and vehemently oppose this after you were done with your testimony. For the record, I would remind the committee, they didn't. So I would also say that with the USF fund being set up and the stuff that the telecommunications industry has done thus far in relation to our great state and providing access and dial tones across our state is pretty substantial.
And may I respond, Mr. Chairman?
Certainly.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kidd. I mean, that's fine, but we could bring people up here that basically and I don't want to embarrass any of the lobbyists for the telecommunications, but one of the lobbyists from one of the telecommunications company basically came to one of these members and said, if you oppose a certain bill, I'm going to oppose your Senate Bill 15. So, I mean, we've got all this stuff going on here. Why are we wasting time? You want to do this in 2 years again? Let's do 4 years. Let's get it done with. Let these people go forward, and we can live happily ever after.
Mr. Chair. I'm going to vote for whichever version I have to vote for. Just get myself off the hook here. Blame these guys. I feel strongly both ways. No, but Senator, in all seriousness,
you guys are definitely
made. If it were 2 years, is that going to hamper the ability of this council to do their job?
I think it will.
You think it will? Okay.
Mr. Chair, I think it will. I mean, okay. This is continuity. You know, go every 2 years, and you think, well, you know, where are we at with this thing? You know, let's do some long-term planning. Let's get this thing going and let them work for 4 more years. If you do Senate Bill 17, you're going to have maybe some change in statutes of telecommunications. You know, it's from my viewpoint, every time you write up a bill, it's, what is it, $1,000? Well, I don't know, it's $1,000 here, $1,000 there.
1,080.
1,080. Is that what it is? Okay.
Any other questions? Representative.
I just have... Oh,
excuse me.
And jumped in there before you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just, you know, I'm just going to say I think I favor Senator Nelson's version of extending this to 2010. I think the PUC provides some continuity, and I also think that, you know, our legislature does turn over, but not everybody's going to turn over, you know, all at once, and we'll provide these updates every other year. So I think those updates plus PUC provides the continuity we need. And I also think this coordinating council is doing some important work looking at our future. So I don't have a problem extending it, you know, for 2010. It's only 4 years. So I'd be supportive of the amending it to the 2010 date on the SB 13.
Representative Esquivel.
I just want to remind the senator you will have a built-in sunset, and that is Representative Schaffer with the answer that he just gave you. He will definitely be back here in 2 sessions.
Hi, Mr. Chair, let's extend the K-12 budget out to 2080.
And he'll still be here.
Mr. Chairman, I would, with all due respect, those little things that we have called elections where we go before review of our constituents every 2 years may be a bit of a burden as well. However, I think it provides some oversight where we don't just arbitrarily say we're good people, we're hardworking, we're dedicated to the job. We're going to change the term of office that we have to 4 years or 6 years. And if that's the logic behind it, I don't know why it's 2010 and not 2020, and just make them a permanent fixture, or for that matter, make them a state agency. I mean, that logic doesn't get me there. So I'm willing to put the amendments to a vote, and if they go down, then I'm willing to abide by anything this committee sees fit.
How long has these been in existence?
1991, I think, they first started.
And so they've been renewed a period of time.
It might have been 93. I don't know. Was it 91 or 93? As time goes by.
That's right.
Excuse me, 2001, not 1991. Where am I? I'm just in the wrong century.
It's only a decade off, Senator. I appreciate your argument.
When you get old, you know, you have the brain cramps. You know.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Yeah,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
We might as well get them all started somewhere. The chair will move the adoption of the A2 amendments to Senate Bill 13. Is there any discussion? I see we got a new staff. Matt Kelly, Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chair, if not to contradict the chair in any way, shape, or form, I would be moving the dash ones into Senate Bill 15, which may or may not, depending on the outcome, nullify a vote on the A2 amendment. So maybe it would be more prudent to do the amendments to Senate Bill 15 so that you can find out which amendments to move on Senate Bill 13.
I agree with that, and so I'll withdraw my motion and would entertain a motion then on the dash ones to Senate Bill 15. Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chair, I would move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 15.
Representative Kitts moves the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 15. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Kelly, can you call the roll, please?
I don't think so, no. No.
No.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
What's your conscience, man? If you disagree with me, you know. I mean, I made my case.
I have a pie in the oven.
I gotta go.
No, this is very difficult, Mr. Chair, for me. Well, to keep harmony on this committee, Senator, I'm going to vote aye.
Well, I guess it doesn't really matter. I'll vote my conscience and vote no.
Chair Brown votes no. So the motion fails.
Fair enough.
The chair would move the dash A2 amendments to Senate Bill 13. Is there any discussion? Kelly, why don't you call the roll in?
Aye.
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 Aye. The motion carries. Would entertain a motion on the Senate Bill 13. We have a work session open. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 13 as amended to the House floor with a deep pass recommendation.
Representative Esquivel moves Senate Bill 13 to the floor as amended with a deep pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Kelly, will you call the roll, please?
Representative
Colby? Aye.
Definite maybe. I'm an aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, I move the Senate Bill 13 as amendment that we've recommended the floor with a due pass recommendation on the consent calendar.
Representative Esquivel moves Senate Bill 13 be placed on the consent calendar.
I object.
We need a carrier then.
More than happy to.
I'd volunteer Representative Kitts. No.
Probably not the best bill for me to carry.
I'd carry it if you like.
Representative Esquivel would carry for us.
I'm going to have a few questions at the carrier.
I knew you would.
Okay, the work session is open on Senate Bill 15. I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt Senate Bill 15 with a due pass recommendation to the floor.
Representative Holby moves Senate Bill 15 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kitts.
I would not 100% sure on how I'm going to vote on this bill on the floor. I'm going to have some discussions with some folks, but I will be voting yes. In committee, but if I stand on the floor and oppose it, I just wanted to give a fair warning.
Thank you, Representative. Any other comments? Seeing none, Kelly, will you call the roll?
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Holby.
I'd like to vote on that.
Oh, do you? Oh, I thought I was the last one, but I guess it wasn't. And so we reopen the work session.
Oh, dear. Aye.
Okay. And I've already voted, so we'll. The motion carries. And
Mr. Chair, she can skip me anytime she wants.
On the first? Need a carrier for 15 or consent bill?
Chair, I move that we place Senate Bill 7. 15? on the consent calendar.
Representative Gilman moves that Senate Bill 15 be placed on the consent calendar.
Mr. Chairman, I got to object.
I think I hear an objection.
Sorry, George.
All right, I'll carry the darn thing.
George, don't do that to me.
Well, sure I will. I want to answer your questions.
I got to wait. We'll open the work session on Senate Bill 17. Kara, can you give us an explanation of what we're about here?
I'd be delighted to, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 17. Creates the Task Force on Telecommunications Law Revision, responsible for reviewing current laws governing telecommunications and identifying and correcting obsolete statutes and inconsistent terminology. You'll recall that Senate Bill 17A is one of a series of legislative concepts that was developed by the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council. Stakeholders and the policymakers have expressed a need to review and revise Oregon law to reflect changing technologies, a pending federal law, and the scope of the Public Utility Commission's current authority to regulate telecommunications.
Thank you,
and you have no amendments. I might add there is a subsequent referral to Ways and Means on this measure.
Will it be budget? Not Ways and Means, but Budget.
Budget. I didn't say Ways and Means. Budget.
Is there a Ways and Means referral, Representative, that needs to be rescinded?
Yes.
Okay. We'd entertain a motion to do something with Senate Bill 17, Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chair, I would move, I would rescind the referral to the Committee on Ways and Means and redirect Senate Bill 17 to the Committee on Budget.
Representative Kitts moves the referral to Ways and Means be rescinded, and that Senate Bill 17 be referred to the Committee on Budget. Is there any discussion?
Do you want a recommendation on that?
It's a recommendation?
We haven't voted on the bill yet.
You don't have to vote on the bill. I guess do pass a recommendation.
What they do pass recommendation. Kelly, call the roll, please.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Sorry.
Is there anybody else? I leave you out this time?
Well, I'm in. I'm all in.
Motion carries. And so that's on the way to budget. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1002. Hi, Dana. How are you?
Good.
Kara?
Sure,
oh, no, we got. But you come back down here to bring peace back to Janet. When
I just wanted to explain to Ellie and Kara that you guys are not usually like this, and I thought these were going to be pretty straightforward bills. Anyway.
Okay, Janet, get us up to speed.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate Bill 1002, and you should have the A in gross bill, reduces the threshold contract value that would require a residential construction contract to be in written form from $2,500 to $2,000. Mr. Chair, the changes are all on page 3 where that number threshold is reduced. Mr. Chair, the Senate vote was 24 to 5, and that's all I have.
Thank you, Janet. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Brown and members of the committee. I'm Dana Bacher, for the record, B-A-U-G-H-E-R. I have a good bill for you today, good for the contractors and good for consumers. In 2002, I talked to several painting contractors about painting the exterior of my house. The one I chose presented a proposal in writing. I spoke with him on the phone to say I'd chosen his company to do the job, but I had a few additions. I wanted to change the flat to semi-gloss, and I wanted sanding and scraping, etc., put into the contract. On a day not prearranged, and after I'd gone to work for the day, the painter came onto my property and applied paint over cracked and lifted surface on the entire west end of my house. I did not have a signed contract. The contractor had submitted a proposal with his signature on it. Long story short, 12 days later, the job was still less than satisfactory. The instructions on the paint cans and internet specifically indicated sanding the surface was required prior to applying the paint. Not to comply with the instructions would void the manufacturer's warranty on the paint. This was one addition to the contract that I had wanted to discuss prior to actual painting. Several problems were obvious when the painter determined he had completed the job, including holidaying, no evidence of backbrushing, unpainted surfaces in some places, streaking, and paint applied to a rough surface. I contacted the CCB, Construction Contractors Board. They concurred that 13 problems needed to be corrected. Upon completion of 8 problems, the contractor pulled his painter from the job and walked away. I would have had to employ an attorney at $175 an hour or file in small claims court to pursue. I did go to an attorney to learn that a document, call it a bid, an estimate, a proposal, under $2,500 did not qualify as a contract. This particular contract had proposed $2,480. And that's where it came in, just $20 shy of the $2,500 bar. I wasn't aware of this fine point until I talked with the $175 an hour attorney and got the crash course in contract law. I don't think a homeowner should be duped like this. And I think Senate Bill 1002 will attempt to fix this. Lowering the contract price for which there must be a signed contract to $2,000 will provide most homeowners with the security of having a document by which they can hold a contractor responsible. Most homes can't be painted under $2,000. Most construction jobs cannot be performed under $2,000. No painter could have come on my property nor proceeded with work based on a telephone call unless there was a written contract signed by both the contractor and the homeowner. My home is my biggest investment. When I have work done to preserve my biggest investment, I hope to get the best deal for my money. $2,500 is no small sum for me. If this contractor had not been able to do the additional work that I wanted written into a contract, he may not have been awarded this job. Instead, many unnecessary problems developed and both parties were inconvenienced beyond reasonable. I have the support of the Senate, and I hope that you'll see also that Senate Bill 1002 is a win-win bill for both the construction industry and the consumer. It's even been suggested by the construction industry, some of the people in the construction industry, that the bar should have gone down as far as $500. This bill had no objection in Senate committee and passed the Senate 24-5, as Janet said. The CCB testified in committee and produced the facts that 362 claims concerning contracts within the $2,001 to $2,500 range were made between 2001 and 2003. 112 cases were settled, 114 cases were awarded monetary damages to claimants in the amount of $228,171. Simple math will show you that 114 cases divided into 228,000 means that $2,000 on the average was arrived at per case. I have no opposition from the electricians, the plumbers, nor the sheet metal workers either as of this morning. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Representative Brown.
Thank you, Dana. Any questions of that? I figured there'd be questions from these contractors.
The bill should pass.
Thank you. Jordan? Because
of the inflation of everything, it seems like this is going the wrong way. That's my feeling. I mean, $2,000 is a fair amount of money, but let's see. I'm trying to think what I did when I redid my deck. I think it was $4,000. What I'm saying is, yeah, a painting job, yeah, maybe, but I kind of question the number.
And I've heard arguments both ways. That it should be higher and that it should be lower. I'm just starting through this bill to go lower.
Any other questions? Don't see any. Thank you, Dana, for your testimony. Is anyone else to testify on Senate Bill 1002? Don't see any. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1002 and open work session on Senate Bill 1002. Representative Shields.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1002A to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Shields moves Senate Bill 1002A to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Kelly, call the roll, please.
Representative
Shields.
Aye.
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 Representative
Gibbs. Aye. Aye. Motion carries. Consent calendar?
Sounds good to me, Mr. Chair.
Works for me.
Okay, the chair moves to be placed on the consent calendar. So done. We'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 131. Janet?
Janet just left.
Oh, switching out, Janet. Janet had to settle us down and she gets up and leaves.
Gets up and leaves.
I'm trying not to take it as some kind of a comment about my management skills. Senate Bill 131 was introduced at the request of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. The Senate vote on this bill was 27 to 1. The measure deletes the requirement for filing a Schedule F tax document if you're filing for a licensing exemption as a farm worker camp operator. The current statute language requires filing a Schedule F if you wish this to have this exemption. However, Schedule F doesn't have a lot to do with this process, and so this is basically a housekeeping bill that would make this a little easier for those persons that are asking for this exemption.
Thank you, Karen. Christy, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Brown, members of the committee. My name is Christine Hammond. I'm the administrator of the Wage and Hour Division at the Bureau of Labor and Industries, and we enforce the Farm Forest Labor Contractor Law and also license farm and forest labor contractors. Just briefly, by way of background, the Farm Labor Contractor Law was originally enacted in 1959 primarily to deal with migrant farm worker issues and concerns relating to the treatment of migrant farm workers. In 1975, forest labor contractors were added into the law, and a lot of the same contractors that contract for farm labor also contract for forest labor, and now some of those are moving into contract firefighting, so we license those contractors as well. Or OSHA actually registers labor camps, although as a condition of operating a labor camp, camp operators are required to be licensed with us as a farm labor contractor and obtain an endorsement to their farm labor contractor license. Your committee staff did a fine job of summarizing what Senate Bill 131 would do. When the law was originally enacted to require farm worker camp operators to be licensed, there was an exemption put into place, and as one of the criteria for qualifying for the exemption primarily applies to farmers who have their own camps. is that they would file a tax return showing farm agricultural activity. At the time the law was enacted, that particular schedule was identified as Schedule F. We've since learned that there are other schedules that can be filed to demonstrate agricultural activity on a tax return. So we were actually advised by legislative council that we should amend the law to delete the reference to Schedule F and replace that language with files an income tax return reporting farm activity. I'd also note that the Farm Bureau supports this legislation.
Thank you, Kristen. Any questions? Don't see any. Thank you. Is there anyone else to testify on Senate Bill 131? And I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 131 and open a work session on Senate Bill 131. Somebody make a motion. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 131 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Esquivel moves Senate Bill 131 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Kelly, call the roll, please.
Aye.
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 Excuse.
Aye. Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Esquivel.
Mr. Chair, I move that we move put that on the consent calendar.
Representative Esquivel moves that Senate Bill 131 be placed on the consent calendar. Any objection? Seeing none, ordered. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 133A. And, Kara, can you? Oh, yeah, excuse me. We'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 1. Well, how did I do? I got the wrong one in the file. That's 132A.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll have to apologize to start with that I, too, confused 132 with 133. You'll note at your desk today that there is a corrected staff summary. Please replace the 132A summary you received yesterday with this one that's marked corrected. Otherwise, you look a little confused. Or you'll get confused because of my confusion. So
this one should be sorry.
It's gone. So
which one now again?
So 132A at your desk correct. Today. There's a corrected version, and I do apologize. It's such like a high bar, and I stumbled over. So moving on with 132A requires farm labor contractors to provide workers' compensation insurance for workers. This measure would make the law consistent with contractors who are licensed as farm forest labor contractors. The current law does not require this of farm labor contractors, so you're looking for consistency in this measure. And under this legislation, all farm labor contractors who have will have to provide proof of such coverage as a condition of being issued a farm labor contractor's license by the Bureau of Labor and Industries. The Senate vote on this measure was 26-3.
Thank you, Kara. Christy, again, please.
Thank you. Chair Brown, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Christine Hammond, administrator of the Wage and Hour Division of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. Actually, farm labor contractors are required to have workers' compensation insurance. This bill would require that they demonstrate that they have that insurance as a condition of being licensed by the Bureau of Labor and Industries, as forest labor contractors are currently required. I also want to note that we would respectfully request that the referral to the House Judiciary Committee be rescinded on this bill.
Can we do that?
We don't have permission from the Speaker to do that.
My question would be why?
Why did it go?
Why are we making the request?
Why would you want that request?
Senator or Representative Esquivel, Chair Brown, we just don't believe it's necessary to refer it to the Judiciary Committee.
Oh, I must have.
Okay, any questions of Christine?
I also should note, excuse me, that the Farm Bureau supports this bill as well.
Okay. Is there anyone else to testify on Senate Bill 132A? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 132A. And once we can hold us over and get a...
That's the only way we can do it. We can't rescind without permission.
Which way is it?
Got to take it to the committee.
Yeah. Petition. Why don't... Yeah. Let's go ahead and send it to judiciary. Representative Escobar.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 132A to referral to Committee on Judiciary.
Representative Escobar moves that Senate with a recommendation.
With the due path recommendation.
Representative Escobar moves that Senate Bill 132A be referred to the Judiciary Committee with a due path recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Kelly, call the roll.
Aye.
Judiciary.
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion carried. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 133. Kara, please.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. I got the right number this time.
Yeah. And I have the right measure this time. Senate Bill 133A passed the Senate on a 25-4 vote. It increases the amount of damages that may be recovered from a person acting as a farm labor contractor for certain violations from $500 to $2,000. As it, you understand, the present law limits damages to, $5,500. Any person who bids or submits prices on contracts or persons who, for compensation, recruit or supply workers for the production of farm crops or the reforestation of lands must apply for a farm or forest labor contractor's license. This legislation would raise the minimum amount of damages that can be sought against a person who acts in violation of the farm labor contractor law. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Could we have Christy again? You might as well stay right there. I think he's the rest of your bills.
Chair Brown, members of the committee. Committee staff is correct. Senate Bill 133A would increase the minimum amount of damages recoverable from a person acting as an unlicensed farm labor contractor or committing other violations of the farm labor contractor law. From $500 to $2,000. This is primarily a private right of action provision. The Bureau of Labor and Industries doesn't actually pursue damages against contractors. The Bureau is not damaged by a violation by a farm labor contractor. However, farm workers or other parties that may have been outbid by a contractor who is violating the law may be damaged, and the proposal is that the minimal amount of damages be increased from $500 to $2,000.
Is that it?
Yes.
Okay. Have you used this very often?
Again, Chair Brown, this is not. This is more a private right of action for somebody other than the agency to pursue damages. So, for example, Oregon Legal Services or any other party that's being represented by a private attorney and has been damaged would be able to seek a greater minimum damage.
And Representative Escobar.
This threshold from $500 to $2,000, doesn't that seem a little low?
Representative Esquivel, yes, probably it is, but it is in line with the amount of civil penalties that the Bureau has authority to assess. So I think the thinking is it's on the same level as other civil penalties.
And so this, it'd be an action from a third person, a third-party person then?
Correct. A competitor or a worker that was damaged as a result of unlicensed activity or failure to provide workers' comp insurance or other violations of the farm labor contractor law. Somebody could bring an action for one of those violations and recover minimum damages of $2,000 or their actual damages, whichever are greater. Sometimes it's difficult to show the actual amount of damages, so this would be the floor amount of damages that may be awarded by a court.
Do you know, does this happen very often?
Sure, Brown, I'm not really aware of how often it's used.
Any other questions? Have Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chair, I'd move Senate Bill 133 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Kitts moves Senate Bill 1. Let's see, that's got to go. It's got to go to judiciary.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll close the public hearing and open the work session.
I'm sorry. I thought we were open the work session to start.
Yeah, we are now.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were in work session.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kitts.
I would now move Senate Bill 133 to the Committee on Judiciary.
Representative Kitts moves Senate Bill 133A to the Committee Judiciary Committee. With any recommendation?
At this time, I'm not comfortable making any recommendation because I don't think the department has made the case that this is an actual problem. So I would hope that they could cite some to the Judiciary Committee that this is why it's a problem. So I don't know why we're making a recommendation at this point in time.
Thank you.
My logic.
So Representative Kitts moves Senate Bill 133A to the Committee on Judiciary without recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Kelly, call the roll, please.
Representative Aye.
Motion carries.
Mr. Chair.
I move we suspend the rules to allow Representative Kitts to vote on Senate Bill 1002 and Senate Bill 131.
1002 and what's the other?
131, please.
131. Representative Schaffer moves the rules be suspended to allow Representative Kitts to vote on Senate Bill 1002. How do you vote, Representative?
I vote aye.
And Senate Bill 131.
I vote aye.
Representative Kitts votes aye on 1002 and 1031. I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 134. Kara, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and the Boley Show continues. 134, Senate Bill 134 passed the Senate on a 28-0 vote. It permits the Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries to accept process service on behalf of farm worker camp operators. The present law only applies to farm labor contractors. So this would broaden that ability by the commissioner.
Thank you, Kara. Christy.
Thank you, Chair Brown, members of the committee. Committee staff is correct. The current law permits the labor commissioner to accept service on behalf of farm labor contractors who are unavailable to accept service and where an action is being brought for violations of the farm labor contractor law. Occasionally, we have cases where a farm labor contractor has also acted unlawfully as a labor camp operator. And through an oversight, the labor camp operator laws did not provide the same provision that the labor commissioner may accept service where the labor camp operator is unavailable for service. This would only apply to those who are operating a camp illegally who do not have the license and permit the agency to accept service on behalf of other people who have been damaged as a result of the unlawful activities of the farm worker camp operator or the agency to take action against the farm worker camp operator.
Any questions of Christy? Don't see any. Is there anyone else testify on Senate Bill 134? We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 134 and open a work session on Senate Bill 134.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kipps.
I don't see a subsequent referral anywhere, is there?
Right. Yes.
All right. I would move Senate Bill 134 to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Representative Kitts moves Senate Bill 134 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Kelly, call the roll, please.
Aye.
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 Aye. All right, motion carries.
And carrier?
Or consent calendar.
I move consent calendar.
Representative Schaffer moves that Senate Bill 134 be placed on the consent calendar. Any objection? Seeing none, in order. Open the public hearing on Senate Bill 135A. Carrigan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 135A passed the Senate on a 28-0 vote. It requires farm labor contractors to submit certified payroll records to the Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. Current law only applies to farm and forest labor contractors.
Thank you, Kara.
Farm forest.
So, other guys. Yeah, Christine, please.
Thank you, Chair Brown. Christine Hammond, Administrator of the Wage and Hour Division of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. Committee staff is correct. Currently, only forest labor contractors are required to file certified payroll records with the Bureau of Labor and Industries. We use those certified payroll records as a tool in resolving wage disputes between workers and their contractor employers, to monitor a contractor's compliance with wage and hour law requirements, and they also provide an opportunity for us to detect any unlawful deductions or other irregularities or violations of the wage and hour laws. The bill was amended at the request of the Oregon Farm Bureau to remove the requirement that persons who use farm labor contractors first verify that the payroll records have been submitted with the agency prior to paying the farm labor contractor. But the Farm Bureau has indicated that they're neutral on the proposal that farm labor contractors be required to submit certified payroll records.
Thank you, Christy. Representative Kitts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just a little, if this is not currently being done, why does it currently need to be done?
Chair Brown, Representative Kitts, it is currently being done with forest labor contractors. Again, many of the forest labor contractors also act as farm labor contractors, so we are trying to make the regulations as similar as possible since they're both in the same body of the law.
Follow up.
Follow up.
At what point do you continue to expand that realm and tie in with some form of germaneness the need for the department to have these payroll records?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
Yeah, I mean, why not expand? You know, if you say farm, you say forest now, and now you're saying farm labor. Why not say folks that are in the food processing, you know, the service and a NORPAC, I don't know what you would call it, the people that would clean and get ready for market those very vegetables or whatever the farm labor is harvesting. I mean, at what point then do you submit to the folks that purchase the product from those that, I mean, you see that, you know, you can tie in the germaneness on a step-by-step basis to where it almost becomes infinite, and then Bowie becomes the police of payroll and could, for lack of a better word, you know, start to use that as almost a harassment tool. I mean, I just don't know that if it's not being done now, why does it need to be done?
Chair Brown, Representative Kitts, I believe the legislature has established special protections for this industry. A lot of farm workers are migrant workers and aren't employed at a cannery or someplace where the records are going to be available to the agency to review. So a lot of these workers are transient, and the law was enacted in the first place to protect those workers from abuses from foreign labor contractors. They don't always keep their own records, the workers themselves, so this is a way to require the foreign labor contractors to document that they've complied with the law.
Mr. Chairman, may I follow up?
If a foreign labor, and I just use a hypothetical and don't know of anybody that falls into this category, but let's say they're paying somebody under the table illegally because they are a migrant worker, maybe here illegally, undocumented, so on and so forth, this wouldn't catch them, right?
Representative Kitts, probably not. If they are paying under the table and they don't report that on their certified payroll records, correct.
Yeah, if I could follow up. And when I say the gotcha type thing and the labor police, could in fact the department, and maybe it's in here that I missed it when I was reading the bill, take their certified copy of the payroll records that you would require of these folks and go to the place of employment and start checking off and a spot check, if you will, for verification based on payroll records versus who's currently working there, and if in fact you had somebody that was working there that shouldn't, couldn't you get them that way?
Representative Brown, Representative Kitts, normally the payroll records are submitted after the work has been performed and certify what wages were paid to the workers. So you wouldn't contemporaneously go out with those records and check off workers as they're working. And a lot of times it's a relatively short period of time the worker's employed by that particular contractor and then they move on.
Mr. Chair, I guess, and I understand the intent of the bill to preserve the integrity of the worker and so on and so forth. I guess I get a little confused by the need there. If this isn't addressing a problem or is designed to uncover a problem or stop irregularities, is it just simply creating another paperwork and hassle for employers out there to do? That's my only concern. I'm fine with the bill if the chair wants to move it. I just don't know the need has been shown that this is a problem. So I just don't want to create more work for those that are out there trying to make a living.
Did the did the Farm Bureau testify when this bill was heard in the Senate?
Representative Brown, I believe they testified that they were neutral.
Representative Holley.
Go ahead. I'll defer to
Representative Gillen.
It'll be long. Define certified for me. I don't know what that means.
Chair Brown, Representative Gilman, it's a form that they can use that the Bureau has come up with where it lists the names and addresses of workers and the total number of hours they've worked, their gross earnings, and any deductions made. They're not required. Contractors are not required to use our form. If they have their own payroll, they may submit their own payroll so long as the same information is submitted. And again, it's basic payroll information that most employers maintain as during the course of business.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to offer that, you know, I can imagine why this bill exists a little bit. I don't have any documentation of a problem so much other than, you know, my experience working with, you know, some immigrant workers who don't speak the language and oftentimes get taken advantage of by somebody who's operating as their coyote or as a labor boss or something like that, and oftentimes these folks don't really know what the rules are, the laws are, and they come to make a complaint and have a very difficult time doing that, and this sort of documentation, you know, would be available, and if somebody made a complaint and had other people that were working there also come forward and say, yes, this guy was working here, but he's not on the payroll, and, you know, it would help verify who's out there in our woods, who's out there in the farmlands that are working, and if they have a legitimate complaint, they could be processed. So I imagine there is a need for this bill myself. I thought I'd offer that.
President Shumpert.
Thank you. Christine, the average business for tax purposes has to maintain records for a certain amount of time after the fact. Is it the same thing for this?
Chair Brown, Representative Shoffler, the wage and hour laws already require employers to maintain records of the hours and amounts they pay to their employees. Other employers aren't required to submit those records to us unless we ask for them.
I guess, Mr. Chair, I'm surprised we went this long without requiring this. If everybody else, all the other businesses have to do it, why not that one?
Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the good representative from the Emerald Empire and his attempt to explain it to me. However, the problems, as I understand it, that the good representative outlined would not be rectified by this. For example, if a worker were shorted an hour, or so they thought, you'd have no way to know that based on, I mean, wouldn't it be the worker's word against the employer's word? I mean, he shorted me an hour here or there. This wouldn't stop that. My concern is, yes, they are required to keep these. The employers are. It's twofold. Number one, having to jump through the hoop of submitting it to Boley. Number two, why is it Boley's business? Why are those documentations your domain? I mean, that's my concern.
Any response?
Well, Chair Brown and Representative Kitts, I assume the purpose of the Farm Forest Labor Contractor Law is to provide protections to those workers, and the Bureau has been given the authority to enforce those laws for the protection of those workers. And we do use the payroll records if an employee comes into us and presents a dispute with their employer about their rate of pay or the number of hours worked. We do go to the payroll records to see what the payroll records show. We also quite frequently can detect unlawful deductions that are made when contractors show on their payroll records the deductions that have been made. And we've picked up on quite a few illegal deductions that way.
Mr. Chair, one follow-up. So if, in fact, if it's complaint-driven, why at that time, instead of just requiring everybody that may or may not have done anything wrong and may or may not never have a complaint, if somebody comes to you with a complaint and said, this was done to me, here's my check stub, why can't you at that time require these documents that they keep at that time for verification to defend the argument instead of requiring everybody to do it under the assumption that there may be a problem later on down the road and you want to have these documents available?
Chair Brown, Representative Kitts, a lot of these contractors don't issue check stubs, and that's part of the problem. We got a lot of farm workers coming into our agency that have been given nothing. Sometimes they don't even know who they worked for. Sometimes they're given a piece of paper that shows how many buckets of whatever produce they picked. But the point is, this is an attempt to make the contractors document the work that's been performed and the earnings of the workers, where a lot of times that wouldn't exist otherwise.
Okay. Any other questions? Don't see any. Thank you, Christy. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 135 and open the work session on Senate Bill 135.
Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 135 as amended. 135A to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Representative Shoffler moves Senate Bill 135A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Kelly, call the roll, please.
Representative
Shoffler.
Aye.
Representative Shields.
Aye.
Representative
Heston.
Aye.
Representative
Heston.
Aye.
No.
Aye. Motion carries. Need a carrier on the floor.
I'll carry it, Mr. Chair.
Representative Shoffler will carry it. And with that, we come to the end of the agenda, and we will adjourn.
Thanks. Refer to your fascinating.